I wake up and chase my dreams. I won't regret when the sun sets, 'cause I live my life like I'm a beast.
The Florida Mountains, commonly known by the locals as The Rock. I get asked, why do I bow hunt? I bow hunt in order to see the first rays of sunlight on a crystal clear dawn. I bow hunt in order to find and satisfy my hunger for adventure. It lies deep in my soul, and I most often find it not in the blood trails I follow or the inches of antler I hold in my hand, but rather in the country I hunt, the creatures I pursue, and the camaraderie of a campfire that we share. In order to feel the pounding of my heartbeat in my ears as I come to full draw on my unsuspecting prey. Failure and The Rock go hand in hand, but the difference is, can you apply the lessons you learned? Some journeys harden our resolve, others soften our hearts, and a select few open our eyes to new horizons. But they all have one thing in common. We will never be the same. There are times in our lives when it is revealed that we have unknowingly been prepared for one event, a single adventure that when looked back upon, it changes us in a way we could never have imagined. My greatest adventure, most often I find, is within me.
All right, everybody. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host, Phil, the Iceman Mendoza. And tonight we are joined by Trevin Stultfus, who you might recognize from the clip we just played, which is from the preview of his hunting film / episode. I guess you'd call it Ibex. And for those of you who don't know, we're also happy to announce he has actually just been selected for one of the finalists of the male AVMs. Is that it? The Adult Film or AFV Adult Film Awards, Trevin, that you just got nominated for?
Dude, if you're gonna drop that bomb, you ought to at least know what the acronym is.
I don't watch it enough, unfortunately.
Oh, whatever.
That's on adult television, right? That's specifically for adult television.
That award there. Television adults watch, exactly. So, Trevin, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good, real good, man.
Always good.
For those of you who don't know, Trevin hosts or co-hosts the show Outback Outdoors on the Sportsman's Channel. He's does. I guess you would be the producer for Train to Hunt. Is that your title?
Executive producer.
Executive
producer. Yeah, more of a, you know, Train to Hunt is more of a collaborative. It's more of a partnership. And we're working with a couple of different, we've got Antler House Media, and I'm getting feedback from your earphones again. Say something.
Me?
Yeah, here you go. Okay. Anyway, yeah. When you it did it came back again. Say something again.
Hey, what about me?
Yeah, about you sound great.
Oh, thank you.
Will
needs to get his stuff together. Anyway, the Train to Hunt's a collaborative of, between myself, of course, Kenton, you know, and then Antler House Media, Clear Fork Collective has even stepped in there. Into the Wind Outdoors has helped us. So, you know, we got that. And, of course, Outback Outdoors. So, are you hearing that, Phil?
Oh, yeah, I got you.
Feedback?
No, I don't.
No, you're not? Maybe it's just me. I'll just ignore it from now on. Okay.
There's someone trying to talk to you, Trevin. Some spirits. Are you in Colorado or are you in New Mexico?
No, I'm in Colorado.
So did you? So real quick, for the listeners that don't know, Trevin, you just got done with a surgical procedure. Yeah, there it is. So tell us a little bit. Well, did you go to New Mexico for that, or were you here? Because I thought you posted.
Fort Collins.
Oh, okay. I thought you said something about New Mexico in that post on Facebook.
No, I don't think so.
Well, maybe I just misunderstood.
Maybe I just said it. New Mexico's always in my heart.
Yeah?
You've got to turn your mic up now, dude. Yeah, that's
it. While Will's fixing his laundry, Trevin, tell us real quick. You just went in, so this is second surgery on that knee, or
okay? So this knee, I've had two ACL reconstructions already. I did my first one in 1990, second one in 2000, maybe, and then after that, I did a. I had a scope done. This is my fourth surgery.
Well, holy smokes, man! How old are you? Shit, 1990, 2000.
Dude, I'm 44.
I was still playing with Legos back then.
Yeah, no, you guys are young pups. I've being a wrestling is hard on your knees, because of the torque. And I was a leg rider, which doesn't mean anything unless you're a wrestler. But I had some issues, and then I started riding bulls after I quit wrestling, so I've got about 75-year-old one. My left knee's about a 75-year-old knee.
So you essentially just took a hammer to your knees for years, and here we are today.
Right. I have no cartilage. Well, I'm bone to bone on most of it, but what cartilage I do have left, the meniscus, had some damage. So what he did is he went in there and he cleaned it up, smoothed it out, and then fixed what meniscus he could. I was starting to train for the Train to Hunt because I was going to try and qualify for nationals again this year. And every time I'd do anything, my knee would swell up like a balloon. And I finally said, I got to get it fixed.
Yeah.
So, well, and let's be honest. I drew this Ibex tag again, and I didn't want to go up on that mountain again with a knee that's just not all right.
So Will, go ahead, man. I we can hear you better now. So I know you wanted to talk to Trevin about that episode. We both got to see it a little early. Hey, and real quick, while I got the mic here and the floor, Trevin, do me a favor, man. Next time you want to use my feedback for one of your what's the word I'm looking for?
That's just kind of a pre-screening press release.
I sounded like a 13-year-old in that quote. So next time, say, hey, man, I want to use this for public view. You want to spruce it up a little bit? I'd have been happy to do that for you.
When anybody in this industry asks you for a quote or a testimonial, that should be a key.
You said, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, is what you said.
Right.
Okay, well, I thought it was you, man. I thought.
Oh, you just thought it was like us just buddies. I see. Okay. Well, let me just say this. That was the rarity. Most of the people that got a private screening before it aired actually knew, hey, I want to get your feedback, a testimonial. What's your thoughts? And I didn't make that clear to you. I just probably just texted it to you and said, watch.
No, Phil, I didn't have any problem coming off like a seasoned veteran.
No, you did a very good job.
I appreciate the early preview. I mean, it was great. I got to see it, and I watched it twice, you know, but I liked it so much. But when I saw the reviews, it was like, everybody had some quality thought input into that review, and it's there I am. Dang.
hold on. Phil, did you even know, though, you were on there?
On where? I didn't. So at first, I read through there. I read Trevin's post, and I didn't go down to read all the reviews. I'm going to be honest. I'm a bad guy for saying this, but I was reading that post while I was at a stoplight when I was driving. So I read down about as far as I could before the light turned green. I hit like, and I kind of turned the phone off. And then Will said, "Hey man, your review made it on Trevin's page." And I'm like, "My what?" And then I went back and saw it. So anyway.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Phil Mendoza says, "Dang about the Ibex."
I think I said something else, and Trevin edited it. That's what I think it was.
I actually made a PG.
So that's okay. We appreciate that for all those kiddos out there. But Will, so go ahead, man. I jumped on you, Will, when you were talking about Trevin's show.
You know what's crazy, though? And this is, I guess this is what I was stuck thinking about when you were talking about all them surgeries and rebuilding Trevin's knees and all that. And they still can't make your penis bigger.
Well,
are you talking about Phil's or mine?
No, I'm just talking in general. I'm talking against you guys. And you know what I mean, though? They're putting your hips back in, all this stuff. And you would think the only thing that someone would even care about is that.
I haven't inquired about that myself. Yeah. So I mean,
I'm not saying I need it. It's just one of those things you wonder about.
Oh, that totally makes sense now, Will.
I've been to a few websites where they advertise the ability to do that, right? You know, in the little, like, pop-up area.
I wondered why everybody was calling you Rusty Zipper. I wondered why. That makes perfect sense now.
Hey, you're talking to Will, the guy who's going to work out in nothing but yoga pants here shortly.
Compression
pants.
Yes.
So
and I've convinced Matt to do it too.
So compression pants, he's basically advertising for the world. So
I'm not
on
afraid.
Camera.
I'm not afraid.
Hey, you know, they used to make fun of our singlets in wrestling. Yeah. And those compression pants are 10 times worse.
Listen, I've been a wrestler, I've been a downhill ski racer, and I've done Olympic weightlifting. I'm doing anything I can to get into tight clothing.
I have wore the tight Olympic style singlets, the squat, you know, the that kind of clothing.
Yeah.
That shit's real. That leaves marks.
It's tight.
You know. Oh man, yeah. If you can show bulge through one of those outfits, you're a man. That's all I got to say. That's it.
Well, that got off topic. Lord, I apologize about talking about the bulge.
This is exactly why I stopped writing down questions.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so to get back into it, Trevin, you have, through Outback Outdoors, and would you call it a film, or are you going to call it a show, or what do you categorize?
You know, it's much more of an adventure film. It's much more of an adventure film, I think, is what I would classify that as.
I'd agree. I'd agree 100% with you. I think it plays much more as a film. It's filmed much more of the quality of I would expect from a film. And, you know, lengthwise, if it was any longer, it would be, I think, considered, well, even at what, 40, is it 40 minutes or an hour and 20 minutes? I forget what it runs as.
It was 44.
It was 44 minutes? That's what I thought. It was in the 40s. So, I mean, it's a little bit longer, and you're at film time, right?
Right.
And I think it plays that good. And, you know, in my review, I wrote that I watched it with my fiance Melanie, who, you know, I would have to strap her down and pry her eyelids open before to get her to watch hunting television. But, you know, after 5 minutes of watching the Ibex, she was hooked all the way through the end. And to me, I, you know, thank you for that, because I've never had that experience before with her, and yeah. I was very happy to share it with her. Also, because it was so damn good, I was happy that I was like, "Oh, look what I brought you to show," you know?
Yeah.
So
awesome. That makes me feel good. First, because I made you look good.
Yeah.
So I
most
like
importantly.
That. Second, because my wife is the same way. I am married to a woman who cannot sit through a typical hunting show, and you and I had a little talk about this earlier, Will, about my ideas on hunting shows. And the fact that my wife sat there, my father-in-law sat there, and when we were in the preview, you know, we were doing a couple tweaks and stuff like that, but they sat there and they were enthralled and they enjoyed the storyline. I knew we had something.
So So what made you come up with this, I'm going to do this. This is what I want to make next. Where did the idea spring forth for Ibex?
For Ibex, I think for the way we filmed that, I've always wanted to do that. I started off in the typical age of hunting television, which was what I like to call the Whack 'em and Stack 'em period. It's kind of like you go through any sport and you see the eras, you know, back in the leather helmets in the football days, you know, and you see that. Mm-hmm. And I think back in the late 80s, early 90s was the Whack 'em and Stack 'em. There was a long time when all we had was VHS for hunting. You didn't have hunting on television. And then I think TNN and some of those other places came up, and you'd start seeing some fishing shows, then some hunting shows. And that's where the old the guys that really created the inroads for hunting television, like, Realtree, Jordan and Bill Jordan, and then there's the old guys from Hank Parker to, you know, all of those guys. They came along and created something that wasn't, except for in VHS. You'd go to the hunting conventions or Bass Pro or Cabela's or whatever, and you'd buy hunting videos on VHS. Well, when I started getting into it, and I guess this is a great time as any to kind of give my history, I moved to Colorado. I was a hunting guide as a younger man. And when I moved to Colorado, I really got into writing about my adventures because I'd always been a good writer. And for you kids out there that probably shouldn't be listening to this show, no, I'm just kidding. For any kids that are listening, pay attention in English class if you want to be in the outdoor industry, because that's the number one way to get in the outdoor industry is to be a good writer. Okay, get off that soapbox. I started writing about my hunting adventures, and through mutual friends, I met up with an individual who worked and owned a Western hunting publication, and through a series of events, I got on. I was became one of their research editors. Started working in their advertising partner the department. Started videoing. I actually videoed Cameron Haynes and learned a lot about humility doing that, because I thought I was in very good physical shape being a college wrestler and just always been an athlete. And then I tried following him around the mountains with a camera and realized that I needed to step up my game. Just to be, you know, as a guide, I'd never guided anybody who could keep up with me. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't doing anything special. But then I went into a situation and, you know, this guy was another level. So that opened my eyes to a little bit of some of that, which I have translated into going to where you're basically a predator. And I talk about that a lot in seminars, where you click a switch, and you guys know when it is. You click a switch when you're uncomfortable and you don't even know it. When you're tired, you don't even care. You're hungry, it doesn't bother you. You're in full-on predator mode, and that's when you know something's going to die. Okay, so I learned a little bit more about that. As time went on, I fell in love with creating a story, whether in the written word or whether with video. When I left working for that publication, I had the opportunity to do my own stuff. I wrote for some other different publications, went on another television show. It just didn't have the right fit. And so I said, you know what? I sat down with a gentleman named Bill Winky. You guys have probably heard of him. Well, I know you have, being where you're at Whitetail Country.
Yep.
Bill, in 2008, at the ATA show, he was talking a little bit about creating this webinar, this webisode, this web TV show where he could bring you almost weekly updates of what the rut's doing in different places. And I thought that was a great idea. And, of course, I was of the same mind. How do you do that with Western hunting? So we formed Outback Outdoors. Four of us formed Outback Outdoors. The first four were Adam Wells, myself, Jim Brennan, and a gentleman named Ryan Litwin. And we went on. And we jumped out there not knowing a whole lot of what we did. And a lot of them didn't have much camera experience. I didn't either. I mean, other than what I'd done with Cameron Haynes and my own stuff. And I paid and got on a plane and went to Georgia and went to a school put on by the guys that started Realtree Road Trips. Steve Finch. You guys probably don't know that name, but in the production world, Steve is an icon. Steve is a revolutionary. He and Michael Waddell sat down and came up with the idea of Realtree Road Trips. Remember, do you guys remember when Realtree Road Trips started?
Nope.
Okay. It was revolutionary because we had always, again, been that whack-em and stack-em type of television show. And then all of a sudden this guy came up and it was much more of that MTV documentary style where it's just fun and more action and a lot more clips and this and that. Anyway, so I went and I, out of my own pocket, paid to go to this school to learn and try and expand my horizons. I wanted to push the limit of sharing an adventure. And that worked out well. Came back with some ideas, and we started, I think, 2009. January 7th of 2009 is when Outback Outdoors went live. And the freedom of the web is awesome because you can have a 7-minute show or you can have a 37-minute show, right? Mm-hmm. No big deal. It's whatever you want because the content's good. The problem comes in television. You have, if you're on a half-hour show, it's 22 minutes of content. If it's an hour-long adventure special like I did, it's 44 minutes of content. So you're kind of restricted. Just a kind of a side note, if you when I first took my first step back from this, The Rock, the Ibex project, the Ibex adventure that we did, I stepped back. I had an hour and 45 minutes edited.
That's long.
And that's all I was doing was – all I was doing was from the start to the finish telling a story. That's what – I'm like, oh, crud, what am I going to do with all this? Well, it wouldn't have made it – and you know this, Will. It wouldn't have made it as a two-part.
No.
Right?
No.
It needed to be told in that hour.
Yeah.
So what we did is we went through and I cut and cut and cut and cut and that's what came out.
Let me ask you this. Do you think – do you wish, you know – I could have shown this, you know, say, in the best case scenario, commercial free, straight on through, hour and 40 minutes long.
I would have liked to have done that. Yeah, that would have allowed me to put a little more humor. And what I mean by humor is not silliness, not trying to do these one liners and be somebody I'm not. But there were some really cool things that happened with the team. Well, like when the guys are pulling
cactus out of their ass, that was good.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
But then there was stuff like just stuff that happened that was just funny. And it's and you know, we had so many cameras running that it captured a lot of it. And so a lot of that, unfortunately, I had to let go because, again, in this type of a film, as you know, it built a drama. It built a suspense, and I didn't have the time to break that up.
So you had to make the choice. You could either run through one kind of, you know, multiple little, you know, kind of almost micro stories within it with the humor and running all that through, or boom, one shot, 40 minutes, drama, start to finish, tell the story, do the best job you can, and here it is.
Right, exactly, and that's what I had. And this was really our first chance to really do that. With a television show, it's different. And we talked a little bit about this beforehand. There's some things I really don't like about television shows. There's some things I really don't like about the outdoor hunting television shows.
We're definitely going to get into that, but
I kind of
want to go down this road with you a little bit of the Ibex, because if we get off topic now, you know, I think – so this was your first go at the longer, more – you know, I always say on the show it's more like a ski film or a climbing film or a mountaineering film. And from my perspective, I think you hit it out of the park. You know, I put it up there with the stuff Matchstick Productions does for skiing or Woodshed Productions does with, you know, the surfing, climbing stuff. I thought it was just as entertaining, and actually now hearing that it was an hour and 40 minutes long originally, I kind of wish, you know, I got to see the hour and 40 minutes, you know what I mean?
Well, we're kicking around maybe having that longer preview or that longer feel on maybe a DVD.
I don't know, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Christmas time.
Exactly. Here's what we found out. Okay. So we've always been about telling a story, but with the television show, you got 22 minutes, you got your sponsors, you're trying to do all this. The freedom I had from this was outside of our sponsor contracts. Okay, I have 13 shows. When my sponsors sign their contracts, that we're going to promote them in these shows and do that. This was totally outside of it. I could totally take it. I didn't have to worry about, did my sponsors, did I give them enough time? You know, I could just go and show the adventure. And I've always wanted to do that. We have taken a couple of films and broken them into two-part TV shows. And they just lost their luster. We were talking about this earlier, too. Will, is 44 minutes, when you take it and you spread it out week over week, you lose some momentum.
Oh, definitely.
You try to pick it up a little bit at the first or the second show, but you just lose some momentum. And this was allowed us to carry that all the way through. So that, I think, was a huge advantage for us.
So were you able to get sponsored for this show?
This was something I did completely on my own. Oh. I did not get any additional sponsorship money for this show.
Because I know you showed a few of your sponsors, you know, gave them a little bit of a shout out anyways.
I use products that,
but I
yeah,
it's done so tastefully. And that's what I wondered about, because I was like, man, he is showing this stuff so tastefully. Like, this is how, if you were to sneak it into regular TV, this is a lesson on how it should be done. It's not saying, boom, I just did this because I've got X bow, brand bow, I wouldn't have been able to do this. It was just like, you know, the panning shots or the zoom outs, things like that, just almost nonchalantly saying, oh, this is what we're using. You know what I mean? If you're so inclined. And I think that was just one of the best I've seen it done.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, we have some good people to look up to. In regards to cinematic film making. You've mentioned some of them, some of the old fly fishing, some of the old skiing films that they used to, you know, they'd travel around and show these, and they were phenomenally done. I think for me, the difference that we did than some of the other filmmakers that are doing these type of cinematic film adventures is we go back. We had what we had, and we went up on that hill during that time period, and we're done. We left.
I think that's the best way to do it.
Well, the problem that comes in is you lose some of the cool tricks you can use and some of the cool tools. Like, did you notice there wasn't a flying shot? I didn't have any aerials in that. You know why?
But I think
we could not. We couldn't fly. It was illegal to fly during the hunting season. Well, guess what? When the show was – when we were done, we had to get back because all of us had work and we had other projects we had to go to. You know what I'm saying? So it was a bummer because there would – can you imagine some aerial shots? How cool that would have looked, like coming up over some of those cliffs? But we didn't –
Well, this is maybe give you some insight to what kind of film camp I'm in. I'm of the side that says Star Wars should just be left alone the way it was done when they had to struggle, when they had to figure it all out, when they didn't have the special effects. Leave these new fucking special effects out of it. I don't want to see that in my Star Wars. And I think having to do it the way you did really made you guys resourceful and really made you use and appreciate what you had to. And that's why I think it really played even more differently than, say, if you could have done it in this big kind of cinematic, dramatic effect. I think it was more story-driven, more history driven. And there's the one guy you did that interview with. I think he owned the deli or the diner.
Yeah.
Or that guy. I want to see that guy.
Dude, he's hilarious. Yeah. You know, and I got to throw the props, to my main producer, which is Dustin Etheridge, Jade Helmick, who was the main guy on the mountain with me and got dadgum friggin' the
appendicitis, right?
Kidney stones,
that's right, kids.
On the mountain, you know, and then Lane Walter, Jordan Brown, Cody Van Treese, who is a gentleman that works for us. Guess what? We met him on that mountain.
I like
the
Cody.
First time I ever met Cody. Well, you met him at Train to Hunt.
Oh yeah.
But Cody, the first time I ever met Cody, I was going up after some ibex, and I see these two guys walking, and We go up there and say, hey, and there Cody is. That's how I met him, on that freaking mountain. It was awesome. And he's still, he's up here. He's actually working for Hamsky Archery, too, now. And I have to throw the props to those guys, from Brian Reed to Chris Asbell to, just so many things. Here's a good example. Bill Pemberton drives from California to come up. Sean Greathouse drives down from Fort Collins to just glass from the bottom for me, because these goats are so amazing. You could have them right underneath you 15 yards and you'd never have a shot. Heck, you'd probably never see them because you could hear them, but you couldn't see them because of the cliffs. So it really did take a team. And I tried to show that it was a team effort. My dad, just really, it's just a great crew.
Yeah.
So real quick, I think that part what did it for me is, I just drew my first sheep tag. So this is, you've been hunting a lot longer than I have, right? But ibex, sheep, mountain goats, those kind of animals seem to be, your everyday average Joe, mule deer, whitetail, elk hunter guys dream of that ibex tag, that sheep tag, right? So I'd say it's on another level. It's just a different level of hunting, because it's not something you can do every day. It's not something you can do every year. So because it was that species with that low of percentage of success rate, and now you magnify that by taking a camera crew, and yeah, you helped your odds by having a great team, but at the same time, to get it on film, and that's what a lot of people don't understand, you could have tagged out. I guarantee you could have tagged out if you didn't have to worry about getting it on film, right? But you chose that you're there to do the best you can with your team. They've sacrificed, and you sacrificed that. And I saw that. And so I think that in addition to the great camera work and everything you guys did, I think is what kind of put it over the top, because it's like, you didn't do it on an elk hunt. You didn't do it on a whitetail hunt. You did it on an ibex hunt,
So. Yeah, but to me, and this is where, I even mentioned it in the film, that I was getting, we had great cell phone service, so it was really cool because I could connect with people. I could Facebook, and I could text, and I could Instagram, and take a lot of people on the journey with me, and then here I am, and they're telling me, just put the cameras away and go kill one. And that's not what it was about. I mean, I don't want to do that. I got enough critters on my wall. It's not about the kill. It's about the adventure. And I don't know how to stress that. I wasn't always this way. I was not always this way. I was, let's go and let's put a critter on the ground. Let's get some blood on our hands. And that was the meaning of a successful hunt. And I'm not that way anymore. And so I don't know exactly what changed, but what changed, I think, was I know exactly what changed. Let me change that. Let me tell you what happened. I tore my shoulder up. Phil, you probably remember when I dove into the pool and tore my shoulder up. Do you remember that in 2011? And I had to go have my shoulder. They couldn't even operate on my shoulder. My hand, I still can't feel my pinky. I had so much nerve damage in my shoulder. And I didn't know if I'd ever be able to pull a bow, let alone lift a bow up, because it was I'm left-handed as far as my shooting, and I lift with that. And I had to shoot with a compound bow. You know what? I have so much respect for people that shoot with a compound bow. Because of health issues, I have no problem with that now, because it saved my season. But I also almost gave up hunting, filming a hunt, because I had gotten, and I'll be honest, I had gotten into a point where it was all about me. And it wasn't about the animal, and it wasn't about the adventure. And so I said, why am I doing this? And you know the answer that I had to truthfully look in the mirror on myself? The answer was, it's for the adventure. So that's when it all changed. And so when you talk about, it was an ibex. It was I filmed my mountain goat hunt in Colorado. It's a mountain goat hunt. I mean, how many times are you going to draw that? Your sheep tag. But for me, that's the time. Because you're only going to maybe have that once in your lifetime. And I'm going to have something. And I was able to kill a mountain goat at 12,400 feet, and my dad was behind the camera. So I shared it with my dad, which was cool, but now I can share it with millions of others. Ibex hunt, same thing. So I know a lot of people say that, hey, put that down. Put those cameras down and go hunt. And no, that's not why I even started. I would have picked up a camera to begin with if that was a possibility. On my mountain goat hunt, I was hunting on a rifle tag. You know how you draw a rifle tag, but you hunt with a bow? I didn't even have a rifle in camp with me. Because 9 times out of 10, when you take a rifle, it's like I take a rifle with you hunting with a bow, and you're going to like, I'm going to try and kill with a bow, but if I have to take it with a rifle, 90% of the time you're going to shoot it with a rifle.
Yeah. Yeah, you get to that 150-yard mark, and you're like, this is close enough. Pull out the boomstick.
So, yeah.
So in the end, though, I think with Ibex, you know, if you ended up with something probably more valuable and lasting with the film.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Imagine with me if I would have killed that goat on that day.
Well, we wouldn't be having this conversation if you didn't film it.
Well, no. If I would have filmed, remember the one that I was over?
Oh, yeah.
If I would I would have missed a lot more of the hunt. Would I have been mad? No. Would I have been sad? Not in the least. Would we have told a different story? Yes, we'd have told a different story. But now I get to go back. And thus, why I'm getting my knee fixed, why it's so urgent, why I'm going to get back on the training hard again. It's honestly, I wanted to go to train to hunt. I wanted to qualify and compete in nationals again. Enjoyed it so much.
Are you going to be hanging out there this weekend, or are you bedridden?
I might try and make it down Sunday, of course, because the train to hunt is this weekend in Colorado. You know, we got already over 70 entries.
I heard it's going to be huge.
Yeah. And that's usually it almost doubles the week before. So we might hit 100 mark, which is pretty darn close to what we had at Nationals last year.
Ken yesterday, he said he thought it was over 80. I think he said it was over 80 already.
It's going to be crazy this weekend, man.
Yeah, and we have a good crew going down there to film that. But I want to come down there, and even if I'm sitting in a chair but then helping doing interviews of guys coming across the line, I'd like to do that.
So another thing I've noticed, Trevin, and all the things you're saying is you didn't start at the top right away with the TV show, which is what I think a lot of guys, you know, they buy a bow, they buy a camera, and they're hoping, boom, next step, sponsors in a TV show. So how many years, you know, collectively was it start to where you are now?
Well, I started out 12 years ago, and people ask me, well, how much money do you have invested? Where's my wife? no. And I've probably got, I work a day job to this day. I work for Hunter Engineering Company, and I sell automotive equipment, and I love that job. And I work a full-time job running Outback Outdoors and High Plains Creative. Someone told me a long time ago, the best thing you could do is put smarter people in place around you, and you'll succeed. And that's what I've done. I do my job, but my job is very flexible because I'm a sales rep, and you know, when you're hitting your quotas and you're a sales rep, you have a little freedom. But the other thing is my product I sell is so good, and I have a service organization that's so good. My job is really real. It's just a joy. So I don't want to leave what I do for a living, but yet my passion is sharing it, bow hunting adventures. So, but it's 12 years. To those guys that say, I've got a camera, I've got a bow, I'm going to go make a television show, I say good luck. And I say, if I was starting right now, knowing what I know now, I wouldn't start. I just keep riding.
Ignorance is bliss, right?
Yeah.
To go into that a little further, how many episodes you guys – for TV for Outback Outdoors, do you prepare every year? Is it 12 or 13?
So it's 13.
Okay.
13 originals and then 13 reruns. So it's, 13 and 13.
So then of those 13, you said So right now there's more. I mean, I know that Dave and then Sean's now part of Outback Outdoors. Am I right?
And Adam.
Mm-hmm. And Adam. So you've got we'll kind of go back into that in a little bit. But what I want to try to stress here is of those four guys, and then you have some camera guys like you guys did Lane's Hunt last year, and some of the other guys that have, you know, Justin and Shelley had some hunts last mm-hmm. year. That mm-hmm. how many actual hunts go into getting 13 episodes? I mean, are you, because there's unsuccessful hunts, there's hunts that maybe just don't quite make the cut, and mm-hmm. are we talking, you know, 30, 35, you think?
A year on average?
Yeah.
We had, it's interesting. Our first year on TV, we hit it out of the park. I think we went like 90% on the hunts we went on. That's unheard of. And mind you, we're a bow hunting only show. Okay? So, you know, hunting's one thing, which I have nothing against rifle hunting, but rifle hunting, you have a little distance there. Bow hunting, you got to get up close and personal, as you guys know. And we went, well, this last year it was really tough. Yeah, sometimes you're looking at 50% success. Okay? So it's, you know, and we don't really like to do a lot of baited Texas hunts, stuff like that. We're kind of, not that we have anything against them. We're trying to tell a story, and the story that we want to tell is what we enjoy doing. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't want to come across as this elitist, because I'm not.
Well, I'll be honest. I have no interest in watching those shows.
Well, okay.
So I'm not going to bullshit you. my head. It's like, nah, I like what you're doing. I like, you know, the Ibex. I'd rather see you do what you did than somebody, you know, killing some 12-point giant buck eating off a feeder pile. I've, you know, what's there's better TV on than that to watch.
But I do want to throw this out there that we – I've gotten into a lot of whitetail hunting, and there is a art to that. And we are learning so much. And I say learning, I'm learning. I'd never been in a tree stand. I was 33 years old the first time I ever sat in a tree stand. I was the year of the Lord when I sat in the tree stand the first time. And I laugh about that because I came from New Mexico. I used to read these magazines, and they'd have whitetail this, whitetail that, whitetail that. Well, the only whitetail we had were these little coos deer that nobody wanted to shoot because they were like dogs. Now, of course, now I can't wait to try and kill a coos deer. I didn't realize what we had. But that was the only whitetail we had in my world. It was always mule deer. So for me, mule deer were the epitome of what it was to hunt. And all they would write on is these articles on whitetail this, whitetail that. Of course, now as I'm older, I realize that we're the minority.
Yeah. I mean,
and the whitetail guys are the majority. So I want to just throw this out there, that there is something to be said for somebody who takes their own ground. Something to be said for anybody who kills a mature whitetail. Let's just be honest. That is not easy. But for you to go into an area, and we have a couple. We have Nebraska and Kansas and a place in Missouri now that we have the opportunity to come in and build our own chess game, our own chess match, and set up our food plots and to hang our tree stand. Hey, dude, it's fun. In July when nothing else is going on, I'm putting food plots in. I'm hanging a twisted timber tree stand. Hey, how about that plug? that's pretty good. But that's what I'm doing. And so for me, whitetail has taken on – I see why it's the largest big game animal hunted. Numbers, and it's just a lot of fun.
I totally agree with you with the whole putting in the food plot and the great chess match that hunting whitetail is. Where I'm saying I'm not interested is I just don't find a guy shooting on a ranch over a feeder pile to be the most interesting TV I'm going to watch. You know, I'll probably watch Longmire, Game of Thrones. I'm going to watch something else. You know, it's not until you come up with something like your film, you know, the Ibex, to drop it in there again, that I'm like, oh, I'm actually going to take my time that, you know, I don't have a lot of to watch TV, and I'm going to watch this.
Well, and that's the – right now that is the magical safe combination we're trying to crack. You know, I got to throw out some names real quick. There's – Rusted Rooster with, you know, the Kiefer brothers and some of their whitetail art, you know, some of the stuff they're doing. Heartland Bowhunter, they came and they really put a cinematic spin on beautiful, beautiful filming techniques and stuff. Whitetail. So there's some stuff out there that's pretty good. Hallowed Ground, just to name a few.
Have you seen what's it? It's on the internet. It's not on TV, but Montana Wild.
I've seen some of their stuff. Yeah, I've seen some of their fly fishing stuff. Yeah. Is I think the yeah. first thing that really caught my attention. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
I haven't watched a lot of their hunting stuff, but yeah. But it's that same style. Again, we were talking. Remember before about the whack 'em and stack 'em.
Yep.
Now on the right side you have the cinematic, okay, and the very cinematic stuff. Now, I fall somewhere in the middle, and here's why. If you have to take a box of Kleenex to go watch a hunting film, I'm not interested in watching it. And that's where we're getting over. The pendulum has swung way over here on the right side, okay? But then on the left side, which is the majority of horrible television shows, hunting shows out there today, are still on the trying to do the whack-em and stack-em style.
Wait, so you're saying the majority of hunting television shows are terrible?
I would say that I think anyone in percentage, I would say that they're not terrible at all. The people are wonderful, and I want, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful to the animals, but when it comes down to watching a show, 90 to 94% of hunting shows I cannot watch.
That's a high number, Trevin. Great people.
What would you say your number is?
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'd probably say 96, 97. I don't know. Maybe I'm Phil? A little more judgment than you.
Honestly, man, I DVR a few shows, and I watch them in the morning when I work out. So I don't actually get to filter through the different shows that are passing. You know, I don't – half the shows that are out there right now, I've never heard of. I've never seen. Just because with my time, I just didn't work out.
Honestly, diplomatic answer. That's not a percentage, Phil.
Yeah.
Well, here. Let me tell you this. There's a reason why I only DVR two or three shows, because I can tell you how many times I've gotten up at 4:35, 5:30 in the morning to work out. The crap that's on TV at that time of the day. Oh my God. I mean, on the hunting channels, I'll say the multiple hunting channels that I have. There's a reason why I don't depend on that anymore in the morning.
So Phil's percentage is there's two or three shows worth watching.
How many are on TV? Hundreds?
Trevin knows the number.
Well, okay, so as a couple years ago, the number was 621.
See?
Okay, and I think it's even more. And that's not counting what's on the web. And I think what's going to happen, just as in any free market, the cream's going to rise to the top. I have no doubt in my mind. You've got producers right now like Brandon Shockey. You've got producers, again, Rusted Rooster, Jason Brown, you know, Steve
Donnie
Finch.
Vincent.
Donnie Vincent. You've got Steve Finch, who's working for JBO, which is John Brunson Productions now, John Brunson Outdoors producing shows. Mark Womack, he's with Sub 7. I mean, you've got some phenomenal producers. And when I mention these guys' names, these are the guys I look up to. Okay? Now, I don't watch a lot of shows because I don't have time. I mean, there's only so many hours in the day, and I like to spend it with my family, just like you, Phil, just like you guys. You know, we got time to work out. You got, you know, but I also need to know what's going on. I need to see what's out there, and I turned a lot of the new stuff on to see. And there's some new stuff that looks pretty decent, but there's still a lot of the same old. And let me classify what I mean by a show that is, in my opinion, not a very entertaining show. Number one, they go heavy. A lot of times they'll go heavy graphics. And if you see an intro that's heavy graphics, most of the time the show is going to be horrible. Now, that's not always. I just say most of the time. They spend a lot of money on a heavy graphics package, but then they just throw these hunts that have no storyline. It's basically cut and paste. I mean, you could edit them on iMovie. Not that there's anything wrong with iMovie as a program, but I'm just saying it's just video camera and, you know, audios. They don't pay attention very much to audio. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in a hunting situation. But what's happened is people have stepped away from the video cam Hunt, Whack 'em and Stack 'em, and are pushing the limits more towards studio type equipment in the field. Now, there's a limit to that when you're a backcountry hunter. Whitetail hunters can get away with a lot more than we can. Wouldn't you agree, guys?
Definitely.
When you what is a jib, you know, the poundage wise, it's you know, you probably end up with a decent jib that has a good flow and the counterweight and all this stuff, and you're running a let's just say a DSLR rig on there, 60, 70 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not carrying that in the backcountry. No way.
Not
because your backpack with, you know.
Not unless you're one of the guys you send to those train to hunt competitions.
Well, right, exactly. And that's why I try and recruit all those guys as cameramen.
Those guys can move.
Yeah. But so I think what has happened is we're moving that way, and the pendulum swung this way, I think it's going to kind of swing back, because let's be honest, we all love the thrill of the hunt. Don't show me a bunch of squirrels and a bunch of more trees, leaves blowing because you have a DSLR or a slider. I don't want to see that as much. Set the scene, but then tell me a story, okay? So you see what I'm saying? We've gone and people have gotten this new feeling of the you know, these slow motion cameras, the FS700 or whatever you want to call it, maybe a Red if they have a lot of money, and they're dealing with these beautiful cinematic equipment. But what captivated you on the IBEX was the storyline, right, Will?
Yeah. You know what?
I think you said
you want people to feel your emotion, and you accomplish your mission.
And the cameras we were shooting there with were simple 5Ds and some 6Ds. And we didn't have enough of the longer lenses, so we rented some lenses for that hunt. And simple monopods and tripods and Rode mics and Zoom H4N audio equipment with lapels. I mean, we weren't running a high budget. I mean, it's not like we didn't have a bunch of this Hollywood-type stuff. But everything we shot, we tried to make, we always talk it in shots of, is this an 8? Is this a 9? Is this a 10? You know, 10 being the best shot you could possibly have. And we were always trying to shoot in every shot. Let's frame it. Let's compose it. Let's set it up so that we're not just getting video. We're shooting for a purpose and that it's really awesome and leads to the storyline. So I know I'm being long-winded in my answer here, but the reason some of these shows you can't follow is because I don't want Harry homeowner with a handy cam taking me hunting. I want to have a story.
Yeah.
I want someone to take me in and show me what they're thinking and get me excited.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah, there's certain people, I've said this before, you could watch them read the phone book. You know, Jim Shockey's one of those guys who can just pull in and keep you there. You know, I've said this before, you know, Matt is one of those guys. You know, there's certain guys I'll meet, you know, who they can talk and just tell stories, you know, and it flows and they have timing. You know, I think that's another important thing is timing. People don't realize how important the timing is in your stories you're telling. They'll either want to blow through them or they're too long or they're kind of choppy. You know, if you have that good timing, you can take a boring story and make it exciting.
Right. And then you have audio. And let's just be honest, audio is, if you want to differentiate between the good and the greats, look at their audio. And it's by far, our audio is the most difficult thing for us to capture, because how many times do you get out there and the wind's blowing 30 miles per hour? I don't care what you have. It's hard to get clean audio with 30 miles per hour wind. So there's all of these different tricks and things you can try. But, you know, it's trying to maintain the level on all of these different fronts. And then you bring it back, and it's being able to tell a story. Now, for IBEX, I don't normally edit everything. I normally will help or wherever they need, you know, wherever Dustin needs me. Dustin's our main producer, Dustin Etheridge, and the guy is all I can say is I am blessed the day that man walked into my life.
He's a talent.
That's all I can say. Now, I have some other great people on my that I work with, like Jade Helmick and Lane Walter and Jordan Brown and Cody Venture. Yeah, okay, but Dustin, I will honestly say, is the glue in a lot of things because he's – anyway, we should have a – go, Dustin. But being able to take my story and edit that down and get exactly all of these different threads – I mean, how many storylines were in that piece? Probably 8. And to bring those all into this main storyline, which is the Ibex hunt itself, but then you have Jade getting kidney stones, and you have me smelling like a goat, and you have, you know, all of
the history,
the friction, yeah, the history, the border patrol, all this, and to bring it together, and then Dustin takes it and fixes audio, makes the color all match, because we're running GoPros and DSLRs, which are beautifully colored, but then you trying to make all of these cameras look the same? It's a big project, and to do it all yourself.
What's some advice you give to guys though who want to be in that position?
If a guy came to me and said, "I got my bow and I got my camera. Where do I go next?" I say, "Put your bow down, okay? Grab your camera, go to a camera school." Go to a legitimate camera school. If I were you, I would go to a camera school that doesn't just deal with whitetail hunting.
So unless that's all. Why don't you give some shout-outs to some good camera schools? People.
Rusted Rooster does a phenomenal camera school. Heartland Bow Hunter does a great – I've never been to any of these. I'm just saying this because I've talked to people who have. We put on a camera school. Our camera school is more of a – for us. You come to our camera school. We used to try and do it for the public, and it's just a lot of work, and there's not a lot of revenue there. And so we've, you know, be good at what you're good at, right?
Right.
You spend a lot of time at doing other things. You get distracted. You're not good at what you're good at. What we're good at is what we do. And so we're going to bring people in. So I'd rather send people to, you know, schools like Rusted Rooster, Heartland Bowhunter. I know Campbell's Camera does it, but I'm trying to think of a couple others. And so go to a school, learn your basics. Here's the deal. You should be able to pick up a camera, any kind, I don't care what kind of camera, in today's day and age, and have it handed to you. You should be able to put it all in manual mode, and you should be able to run that camera in 15 minutes, all in manual mode. Okay? Have you ever watched a scene, and you're watching a scene, and the elk goes behind a branch, and all of a sudden the elk is out of focus, but the branch is in perfect focus?
Yeah.
It's because that guy's running everything in manual, okay? Or he's running a camera that doesn't even have manual settings. Now, I'm not knocking that, but when you're trying to maintain and you're trying to get some of these shots, you need the ability to adjust for lighting settings and to adjust. And if you're going to do that, you need to know what a camera can do. So that's what we teach. The very first thing, the very basics we teach are, here's what a camera does, here's how you adjust the camera, and here, let's go practice. Okay? Because we're going to assume that a guy can walk. We're going to assume that a guy can do some of these things. Now, you really don't know. It's harder to turn a cameraman into a hunter than it is to turn a hunter into a cameraman. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Because I can teach you to run a camera. I can't teach you to move around animals.
That's well put. That's real well put.
So that's very important. So you could come to me and say, "I want to be a cameraman." Well, great. And the only way we're going to know that is we're going to teach you to run a camera, and then we're going to put you in situations, and some people will do well, and other people will sound like a herd of elephants. And I can't help you. if you can't move around in the woods – you know, that's something that you're either born with or you're taught at an early age. Maybe you can learn it, but I don't know if we have that kind of time.
So what do you think is – where do you see hunting going? Where do you see the trends happening? Where do you see this thing?
And I see hunting, and I'm really excited about this. I see this hipster movement, this
love
self-reliance. Huh?
I know you love those hipsters.
Oh, I love the hipsters. I don't like the beards and the skinny jeans.
Yeah.
I like the beards, but if you're wearing a beard, you should, and you have skinny jeans on, I believe it should be in every real man's right to go and cut the skinny jeans off you, and you should have to wear your tighty whities for the rest of the day. But that's just my advice. If you're going to sport the beard, then sport a man's pair of pants. Is that too much to ask? I like the hipster movement because there's a lot of self-reliance and there's a lot of real attentiveness to what you're putting in your body, where you're getting it from. If there's one thing I could teach a kid, it's where does our meat come from? Where does our food come from? It doesn't come from King Soopers. It doesn't come from Shaw's. It doesn't come from wherever you are in the country that has groceries.
Wakeman.
Piggly Wiggly. I don't know. Well, there you go. Piggly Wiggly, is one
Publix,
in New Mexico.
That's a big one.
Okay, all right. Well, it doesn't come from there. So what we're seeing is these guys are literally wanting to go out and kill their own meat and sustain themselves through the work of their hands. I don't care if that's with a bow or rifle. I don't care. And it's awesome because what that's doing, that's unfortunately the same guy, fortunately, the same guy that 3 years ago I was arguing with because he thought hunting was wrong.
Yeah.
But not always, but in some cases it was. And now we're seeing those guys, because of this hipster movement and this desire for organic meat and truly to understand where you're getting your food, they're going to, and we need to embrace that culture. And we need to help come alongside them and help. Phil, I'm sure you're seeing it. Guys coming into the shop, they want to shoot a bow. They want to go out and even kill just a doe because they want to fill their freezer. That's great. So with that being said, though, I think you're going to come to a more educated hunter. What I mean by educated is they've been watching Discovery Channel and the History Channel and all of these. And when you watch a nature show on any of those channels, those are top notch, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Hundreds and hundreds, if not millions of dollars in the production. Are they going to switch to a hunting show and be entertained? No, they won't. So we're going to see more of this clientele, I think, crying out for quality cinematic adventures.
You know,
and so.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I think that the movement of the hipsters and the movement of, sometimes this crosses over too, but the movement of the hunter athlete, where you're getting more CrossFitters and fitness related guys involved in bow hunting, are, two of the best things for hunting, because otherwise all these companies or shows, they have to fight over a shrinking population. Whereas with these guys coming in, it's like, hey, more people to the party, more people to go after, and that's really something hunting needs, is more allies and more interest in it.
No doubt. Every seminar I put on, whether it be at an International Sportsman's Expo or at a Cabela's or wherever, I talk about this. And that more people are dying every day that are hunters than we're replacing. And that's changing, I think, with this movement. We're recruiting more hunters. I think going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier and getting someone coming to me and saying, hey, how do we get into this? Part of that is them understanding how television works. And I talked to you a little bit about my frustrations here about the typical television time buy. And how much I hate that model. And the reason I hate it is it actually promotes mediocrity.
Now, let's explain that.
Well, you have to pay to be on. Okay, so you wouldn't think it would promote mediocrity, but there's a lot of people that have money. And there's three channels really right now. There's Outdoor Channel, Pursuit Channel, and Sportsman's Channel. I like to say there's really only two channels. There's Outdoor Channel and Sportsman Channel. Pursuit Channel is on it's a different level. It doesn't even show in HD. So for me, it's not even valid. I do all this stuff and all this work, and it's going to be showed in standard def. So to me, Pursuit Channel isn't even a viable option. But it is something you can get.
Sorry, Pursuit Channel people.
I'm sorry. Yeah, love you, Moose, and all you guys over there, Mossy Oak, and everything. We love you, but that's just my true opinion. You get what you get.
Hey, that's what
probably why I'm not with Mossy Oak anymore. Hey, here we go. so, but with that, what that does is that, so Phil wants to have a TV show, and he's got a rich uncle, okay, who loves to hunt, and they think they're gonna go. Phil is gonna be the new superstar. Okay, his uncle's going to back it. They're going to go to Hoyt, They're going to go to Maceo. They're going to go, and they're going to get picked up with all these sponsorship money and get everything paid for. Okay? Because it's going to cost them their first year just for airtime and production, probably going to cost them about $150,000 to $200,000. Okay? And that's even if they want to just be kind of entry level.
On the Pursuit okay? channel.
No, I was thinking Sportsman's Pursuit might be a little less, maybe $125,000.
All right.
Okay? But still a chunk of change. And yet, you know, after that first year goes by and all of that money came out of your pocket because you couldn't get a sponsor, or the sponsors you got, they gave you a bunch of free stuff, but they didn't write you a check. So now you have boxes of camo. And guess what? You can't pay the light bill with the camo, right? You can only wear one pair of camo at a time. You know, and I wish these guys would understand that, because you get that and then you just get this turnover. And you would think that it would go like this and drop off. But there's always 15 more to replace the one that falls off. Because of the passion and the desire. And I think it's to become something more. It's to be identified as this great hunter, I think is the initial thing. Now, I'll raise my hand. I was very egocentric about back in the early days, about wanting to be this something maybe I'm not, but that sure changed quick with all the time and energy. And now I believe it's about telling a story. That's why I can put on Lane's sheep hunt and not have a problem, Justin and Shelly, anything they do and not have a problem, because it's about a team. It's about an adventure. It's not about me. I still walk through the Denver airport, and nobody recognizes me. And that's okay.
I don't believe that, Trevin.
Because I've seen Michael Waddell walk through an airport and not be recognized. Now, you walk into a big hunting convention, and he's mobbed. But we think the hunting industry is kind of big. It is not. It is tiny, tiny, tiny. I'd be better off to go and write a computer program for a new friggin' Xbox video game. I'd be noticed by more people in airports. They might be computer geeks, but I'd be noticed by them much quicker than I would in the hunting television market.
You know, I think you hit on something, too, where some of these guys, they put a priority on being – you know, themselves, well, not on being themselves, but on being recognized themselves, on the how important they themselves feel, and not on how their viewers feel, on how important their viewers feel watching it, on not capturing their hearts and their minds, which is what I felt like you really put the emphasis on Ibex, was capturing, making sure the people felt something. It wasn't
right.
About Trevin. Trevin's out here hunting. Trevin's doing this. Trevin's the man. Trevin's the, you know, the great white hunter. It was, I want these people, everyone watching it, to be able to feel the emotion and the power and the beauty of this place and this hunt.
I think that's the key. I think you have to be comfortable in your own skin. And I'll be honest, it's just been the past 5 years, I think I've really become comfortable in my own skin and who I am. I say Michael Waddell a lot because I think in a lot of people's eyes, he's the biggest, other than maybe Jim Shockey, the biggest name, recognizable name in our industry. And the one thing about Michael Waddell, and I don't know him, like I don't have his cell number, and I couldn't pick up the phone and call him. But I've been around him enough to know that what you see on TV is what he is off of TV. Another good example of that is Fred Eichler. You guys know Fred Eichler from Eastern Reality Bowhunting. I know Fred, and I know Fred a lot better. And what you get with Fred is what you get on camera or off. They're genuine people. And what I don't like is when somebody takes something like Michael Waddell and the way he talks and stuff like that, and then the next thing you know, you have all these other guys trying to emulate that. And It's just not genuine. You can see through that. I think you can see through it. So.
I agree. I definitely agree. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, I mean, I see it a little bit. I mean, on the so I shot ASA for quite a few years, and there's a lot of guys that are I'm such and such as camera guy, or I'm such and such, and you see them really trying to be who that person is, you know, trying to act like him and right. you know, talk like him, and it's like you're not him, you know. So I seen it on that level, but I don't know, man. I agree. I think the guys that are true individuals and they can be their themselves and people like to watch them being themselves, mm-hmm. those are the mm-hmm. successful guys.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I got to plug in or else I'm going to go dead here. Hold on. Hold on, all you world.
So, Phil, do you see a lot of skinny-jeaned bearded men in the shop?
No, I tell you what, it's you know the fads, right? I don't know if anybody. I know Trevin will remember this. You know, back when I was, I don't know, 8 to 10 years old, 12 years old. You seen the guys with the MC Hammer pants, right?
Wait, big you're not old, still wearing those?
No,
I'm the only one.
You know,
shit.
And then I remember the you know the saggy pants, the guys you know sagging pants off their ass, and then now you're seeing the skinny jeans, and it's like. Why can't you wear a pair of pants the right size of your waist and put them up like you're supposed to? Isn't that – I mean, I don't know, man. I get what Trevin's saying. I see the guys where they're wearing a pair of pants that's like four sizes too small. It won't right. – I mean, it won't fit up over their butt, right? It's like below that. And they can't walk. They can hardly walk. They got to keep their hand on their waist to walk. It's like, what are you doing? Who wants to see your underwear?
Now we're not going to include compression leggings in this, correct?
No.
So those are leggings, fine, guys.
It takes a man.
To Phil's shop, wear compression tights.
It takes a man to wear compression tights and to wear them with your shirt tucked in. That's the key.
Oh, with the shirt. That's the look.
Or no shirt at all.
Or no shirt at all.
That's what I'm talking about. No shirt at all.
There you go.
Show what the Lord gave you.
I tell you, owning the shop, I have to be very politically correct and very, you know, not that I put on a front by any means in my store, but I tell you what, there's been a few occasions where I got to make sure the filter's on because it's just, hey man, it's not my cup of tea. You know, I'll service and take everybody the same, but some of the people, we live in a very well-rounded state, wouldn't you say, Trev? I mean, Colorado is so diverse with what you get here that, I don't know, man. Sometimes I'm scared, you know, but of what I see. But it's interesting place to live. I'd assume New York's not too far off.
Oh man,
I'm gonna tell
you right now. I welcome hipsters with open arms. Come with your IPA beers and your mustache wax and your hard part haircuts. I go get my haircut at a hipster barbershop.
Show them the
haircut? I just got this the other night. Check this out. Look at that. Look at that hard part cut in there. You see that right there?
That's
the
style.
Real deal. That's cutting edge style, Phil. Yeah.
I don't know what style is anymore.
You're going to see me. You know, I'm going to start it. You're going to see this catch on. And you know, maybe in the hunting community, they'll just do camo. You'll be seeing guys going shirtless in tights. With hard part haircuts, all gelled to the side, and sandals.
What if you don't have enough hair?
We're gonna. I mean, we're gonna like cut, with me, Trevin, don't worry. No, we're gonna cut a design in for you,
dude. I go with me. I just go shave. I just go almost aerodynamic.
Yeah, we'll take you to my boy Critter on Saturdays. You come in, schedules you. He'll do a nice design.
Critter,
you won't believe it. It'll be perfect.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, going back to. Moving forward now, right?
Going back to moving forward.
I want to get back into the Ibex, the second, you know, your second crack at this hunt. So you just got knee surgery. You've got, I mean, you got to at least have a couple months of recovery before you can even start working out, 2-3 months before you can work out, you know, of any kind of
I'm hoping I can start in a month. I'm hoping in a month I can start biking, maybe some light biking. And then swimming. You know, the doctor basically told me, you're done running. And I promptly told him, no, I'm not. I want to play soccer again. I play on two different teams. Soccer to me is a way to – it's one of the best cardio. And I love chasing that dang ball around. It's something I've done for a long time, and people make a lot of fun of me, and they can, and I don't care. It's the world's number one sport, and I just love the game. So I want to play that again. But see, I'm on a pitch that has grass or it's turf, you know, so it gives. But they really want me to stop pounding the pavement. So I think what's in store for me is a lot more biking and a lot more swimming. Now, I'm going to just do some trail running too because, you know, Train to Hunt, as we know, entails carrying and then, of course, you know, carrying weight, which isn't going to be a big issue because you're not necessarily what you guys run. I don't run with – because I'm in the old man's division, the over 40, and it's – I think it's 80 pounds this year. There's just – I just can't run with that type of weight. It wouldn't be safe. I'm 100 and – well, when I don't have my baby belly, I'm 135 pounds. You know, now I'm 150 because I've been sitting around freaking eating bonbons and editing so much lately that I'm a little – and I can't work out because my knee swells up. So I'm a little heavy, but normally I'm about 135 pounds. And so I'll get to that, start packing some hills with weight in my pack, you know, just doing the training. And then getting on Kenton's website every day, and although I might not do a lot of the running, again, where I'm pounding as much, but, you know, those exercises and that CrossFit / bow hunting explosion or that collision, you know, I don't care who you are. And, you know, I heard some of your stuff in earlier podcasts about guys being haters, about you don't need to – you know what? Let me tell you something about you guys that don't think you need to work out. I'm going to just bring one point to light. You guys did a good job about bringing this up the other day. But if you work out to do anything, you will do better. I was a bull rider. When I would work out, my mind, riding bull is all in your head. It's all in your head. I mean, yeah, you got to have some balance and some strength. But 95% of riding bulls, you do it before you get on. It's in your head. When I worked out, my mind was in a good place. My body felt good. I felt good, but I was ready. And I find the same thing happens when you're making that shot. When you come to full draw and you got to make that shot and you got to settle that pin and you're when your mind's right, you'll make that shot. And your mind gets right when your body's right. So I'll get off my soapbox there. But you guys say, you don't need to work out. I don't care if you're walking 15 yards to your tree stand. If you work out, you will be better prepared to make that shot. Yeah. End of story.
And you've made a lot of shots that really needed to count. You know, how important is it, would you say, to have that confidence that work stuff gives you?
It is. There's nothing. I can't say how much is important. I mean, I remember when there's a great line Brian Reed said in that film, in the Ibex film. He said, if you take a shot hoping, you shouldn't take that shot. If you miss and you're surprised, then you did okay and you took that shot. And I remember, like, I shot a deer. It'll be on the end in fourth quarter in season 7. And I shoot this whitetail. He comes out 68 yards. Well, you're not supposed to shoot a whitetail at 68 yards. Well, he's standing out in the middle of a daggum cornfield. Doesn't know I'm there. He's about to hit my scent cone. And so he stops. I range him. I mean, I got all day long. I dial my Tommy Hog in. Come to full draw. I got all day. Not a stitch of wind. I punch him. He doesn't leave the cornfield. He goes down. Now, did I doubt that I was going to hit him? No. Now, if I would have pulled back and hoped, I probably would have let down and just let him go. You know what I'm saying?
So you bring up a good point, Trey. And you know, not to go back into the writing thing, but I've written a handful of articles that I have yet to pursue anybody to look into, right? I've done a lot from the standpoint of the shop, but that's exactly – you're touching on one thing that I chose to write about is – so you talk about your Tommy Hog. You talk about shooting long distance. You talk about this equipment we have now that's capable of shooting long range and ethically killing animals, right? That's if you right. put in the time. But where do you draw that line to – you're depending too much on your equipment and you're lacking in your hunting skills. You know what I mean? Not that you were in that situation, but it just it brings up a topic that I like to get other people's opinion about, because how many guys make that stock, right? You're stocking in whatever the animal is going to be, your whatever the shot opportunity is going to be. You're putting your final ascent, and you get to that 80 or 90 yard range, and it's like, hey man, I've dialed this in before. I can shoot it, I think, you know. But and you, can your equipment get there? Yes. But now you're forgetting on closing the distance, right? Mm-hmm. That last part of the hunt that really, in essence, kind of, you know, it is the more heart-pumping, adrenaline-filled portion of the hunt, that last 30, 40, 50 yards of getting in there. I mean, is equipment making hunting too easy for us?
Well, here's my answer to that. My answer to is equipment making hunting too easy? It's simple. I have made longer shots. I practice out to 125 yards. Okay. Why do I do that? Man, because I love seeing an arrow fly. There's, you know, I have to give old Uncle Ted the kudos on this one when he talks about the mythical flight of the arrow. Oh man, it's a beautiful thing. So I love to shoot and see that. I love to hit a target at long distances. But the only time I shoot long distances is if I can't get closer. And what I mean by that is, here I am in a tree stand on a cornfield. What am I going to do, climb out of the tree stand? Now, normally when I'm in a tree stand, I can't shoot, 25 yards just because it's so thick, you know? So these big, long shots aren't as much a factor in a lot of the situations. But in this situation, I was on the edge of a field. Animal came out. It was within what I deem as my comfortable position. Everybody's different. You have to. And on some days, 60 yards is way too far. I mean, I can't tell you, Phil, and I've seen you shoot, even though I will say that I did beat you at the ISC thing.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
But that's the only time in my life. Yeah. I think you were shooting your wife's bow, and you were shooting it left-handed. But I will say this, that on some days I'm not going to make a 60-yard shot because the conditions aren't right or something's not right. But on other days, I'm not going to think twice about it. Now, there's also something to be said for a 7-yard shot. That's what I love. Oh, honey. I love that call. And all of a sudden, you know, and here they're coming and raking the tree. And I mean, and you know how it is. You've been there. And that adrenaline level just comes up. And next thing you know, he's coming around this juniper and you're at full draw at 7 yards. Which would I rather have, a great 70-yard shot or a 7-yard shot? 7. Why? Because you're close. That's why we bow hunt. Now, those people that want to throw out there, well, that you just need to get closer. You know what, dude? Whatever. Haters gonna hate. If you
shake it off, shake it off.
Yeah, I mean, so whatever. I mean, okay. So there's people that are gonna. If you get too into the traditional, there's traditional guys that get mad at the wheelie bow guys. You know, and I shoot a traditional bow too. It's just funny. There's just always going to be haters. If you pick black, then someone's going to want white. If you pick red, they're going to want green. I mean, that's just the world we live in. So you just shake it off and go, you know. But for that, to answer that question, if I can get closer, I will. But when you run out of cover or it's your last go, and you know, I shot season six, the first show of season six was Wyoming, and there was this buck bedded in this draw. And I just happened to range this tree on the other side of this draw, 60 yards right on the dot, okay? Guess what? I knew this buck was down here. We got into this tall sage. I couldn't see, but I heard him get up. I heard him get up and bound. So I actually came to full draw, and I was going to whistle at him, you know. He's a mule deer. Sometimes mule deer will stop, you know, right at that peak. And sure enough, I'll be darned if he didn't stop right by that juniper, 60 yards. And I pinwheeled it. Well, it wasn't all day. I didn't have all day. I had about 4 seconds, but everything was right. You know what I'm saying? So every time, if I can get closer, I'm going to get closer. And what a lot of the people that are saying that is perhaps they don't realize the situation that I was in. Now, I'm not going to back up from an animal and shoot him because he's too close. You know, I've missed I show it on the TV show. The morning I shoot this buck in Wyoming last year, I shot him at 60 yards in an open field. I wasn't going to get any closer. But that morning, I missed a buck at 42 yards. And I was in a ground blind. And I had all day. And I missed him. And there's no reason I should miss him. But that's why they call it hunting and not killing. So, anyway.
But still, I mean, you still didn't technically answer my question. You told me how you'd handle it, right? And I agree with you. I kind of feel the same way. If I feel that where I'm at is I can't get any closer without risking bumping an animal or whatever it is, or that's just the terrain, right? I agree with you, but here's why I asked that question. I've got so I'm talking on the other side of the counter now. I'm your archery retailer, right? Guys come to me, and I get guys that come in a week, 10 days before season, wanting to buy their first bow. They're going hunting next weekend, you know? And because there's really a lot of systems in place with the wheel bow to make you accurate pretty quickly. But you lose the confidence, the comfort factor from shooting multiple arrows and getting proficient with your setup and learning how to tune your broadheads and learning what it is to blow stocks and get close to animals. So I don't know, with today, the day and age, everybody wanting everything now, everybody wanting the fastest and the best thing now. I'm just curious. You've been in the industry and longer than I have and been hunting longer than I have, but I think that some people are forgetting a small part of what it is to be a bow hunter, and a lot of times it's closing that distance. I mean, I'll be for one, like you, Trevor, yeah. I shoot long distance all the time. I practice long distance, but I agree with you. I'd rather take a 25-yard shot on an animal than a 75-yard shot.
Right. The reason we bow hunt is to close the distance. The reason I love bow hunting so much is the close proximity I get to the animals. And so, and that's why when I get to shoot, when I get to shoot my trad bow, although I don't shoot it a lot, I this year one of my goals is I'd like to take a doe with my trad bow. You know, and I can only shoot that bow really somewhat accurate. And what I mean by somewhat is I would only shoot at an animal probably to 25 yards with my trad bow because I just don't think I could. I don't feel confident shooting any further with that. So, close the distance. That's the key. But with today's day and age, I'm not going to dictate what you should shoot, and neither should you dictate what I should shoot. I mean, we have to be a brotherhood, a band of brothers that support each other. But then also, not every brother's the same. You know, I've got a little brother who has a jumping ability. He can palm two basketballs, jump up and dunk them both. I can't. I can barely clear the Loveland phone book, okay, which is about that big. All right? We're different. So I'm not going to take away the fact that he's got hops and I don't. I got slides. So we got to treat each other with respect. Although on the flip side, when the guy does walk in and he says, hey, I want to go kill a bull in a week, 10 days, what bow do I get? You're probably going to set that guy up with a whisker biscuit. You're probably going to set him up with like a spot hog 5-pin. Hoyts almost shoot themselves, but, you know, you're still going to want to, how about that plug?
Any more subtle plugs you want to get in there, Trev?
No. You know, but you're going to set a guy like that up with some foolproof, something that's a little less technical, so that all he has to remember to do is try and get his anchor point and look down his peep. You know, I mean, but you know what's frustrating, though, Will, to be honest, is guys like that, and then they go in and they kill a 380 bull.
It happens, man.
It does.
One thing we haven't talked about much, which we probably should because it's this weekend, is Oz, Land of Giants.
Oh, yeah. Land
of Thunder, my bad. What's going on with it, brother?
So Oz, the Land of Thunder, it's our second in the two-series set, Ibex being the first, New Mexico, the Rock, an Ibex Adventure being first, and then Oz, the Land of Thunder, which is really an interesting piece because that started out when we had a trip I don't know if you guys knew this, but Adam is from Australia. His family, his mom, his dad was in the service, I think, and they met in Australia or something. Anyway, but all his family on his mom's side is from Australia. So as a kid, he went over to Australia and worked on these stations, these sheep farms and ranches and stuff like that. And so the opportunity came for us to go and hunt Arnhem Land, which is like very, very far north Aborigine land that's been set aside for this culture. And it's not something that gets hunted by white people a lot. And we got the opportunity. And so I went and I said, hey, you know, Adam, this is something you need to go to because you have a history there. What a great storyline. He got to go back and see his family and go to a station like he worked on as a kid and meet, you know, just kind of good, and then go out there. Well, we had a camera guy that was kind of making some transitions, and 7 days before they flew out, he said he didn't want to go on this trip. And I said, what? He goes, yeah. He goes, I just don't want to go on this trip. I don't feel like my heart's in it. I don't want to. And I said, I don't care what your heart's at. You're going. I already spent, you know, $4,000 on this ticket, and it's non-refundable. Well, he said no. And he drew the line in the sand, and off he went. And Sean Greathouse comes up. And, of course, Sean Greathouse, one of our good friends and has been running cameras kind of and hunting with us. I mean, just a great guy, a good – one of my best friends in the area. And he said, I'll go. Well, you have to understand how important this is. We've got a lot of money tied up, and we got a lot of commitments. We got to – you know. So if they don't go, Adam weighs his ticket too. So then we have to buy Sean a ticket with 7 days to go. So you know how expensive that was going to be. And we had to train him up on all the B-roll and all this stuff that we had to do. Well, Sean comes out the office, spends about 3 days with Dustin. Dustin had just kind of gone full-time with us. And Dustin got him squared away, and off they went for their first trip. I mean, this was the first time Sean had ever been to Australia. And what an adventure. They go, and it's just, you know, I'll let you watch it, but it's one of those shows that just, you get to see some of the history, like you and I were talking off air about just touching on being in Sydney and then going out there and being with the Aborigines people and seeing the culture and the travel it took to get there. It was all an adventure. You know, five of the deadliest, of the eight deadliest snakes in the world are all right in that region. And they're walking around in shorts.
I saw that. That was a bold move.
Crazy. Crocodiles, you know, it's just crazy. So it leaves for an adventure and even a little bit of redemption. So I don't want to give away the plot line, of course, but it's an opportunity to meet new friends, have new experiences. And yeah, I mean, it's just, there's just something about Australia that is – well, you know, it's kind of like we talk about Alaska, you know, the last frontier. Australia's, there's a lot of areas that you can't get to by freaking helicopter.
Yeah.
You know, so kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's, so I'm hoping it'll be received as well as Ibex.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. I was actually shooting the ASA circuit with Sean when he decided he was going on that trip.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
So it was pretty cool because I got some of his feedback early on, and now to see it coming about, I'm excited to see it also.
Yeah, I'm excited to have it shown. It's a different film than Ibex. It's definitely a different film. I don't want to give it away, so I'm not going to talk too much more about it. But it's a different feel. But I still think I think it's well done, and I think we did a good job.
And when's that air, Trevin?
That airs this Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern on the Sportsman's Channel, and it's called Oz, the Land of Thunder. Dum, dum, dum.
And I know we're running out of time, but another question I got for you is the music for Ibex. Who did that? The woman there singing.
Oh, you like that, huh?
Did like that. Was a good song.
Yeah. Well, you need to go to Facebook and you need to go look up The Damsels. The Damsels. D-A-M-S-E-L-S. The Damsels. Now, this is Aubrey Bullock is my boss's daughter. Okay? She lives here in, or was born and raised here in Loveland. She's now out in Nashville. And I'm blanking her partner's name, and I feel horrible about that. I'll pull it up here in just a sec. And it's amazing because they I stay in pretty good contact with their dad, and so he sends me some of their music. Well, this is that piece was a demo piece, and it when I heard it, I said I gotta have it. And the guy and I talked to their producer, and he's like, "Oh, this is just the demo piece." I said, "I don't care, dude. It is awesome. Please give me the rights." And so he ended up going through his channels he had to go through, and we got the rights for it. But was that not an amazing, amazing song?
I tried to Shazam it. It didn't work.
It's not Shazam, even on iTunes yet.
And I'm like, come on, Shazam. I need this.
Hey, you need to go to Facebook and get on the Damsels Facebook page and ask them, hey, I heard Immortalized on the Ibex, on the Rock, an Ibex adventure. Where can I get a copy of that? You need to, everybody needs to do that because they are, it's a powerful song. Powerful song.
And how do you spell their band name one more time?
Damsels. D-A-M-S-E-L-S. And I'm pulling them up right now on my phone because it is. Man.
I'm a big
It's Aubrey Keeney Word. It's Aubrey Bullock and Keeney Word. K-E-E-N-I-E Word. Keeney is the blonde and Aubrey is the brunette, and they're both beautiful, beautiful young ladies, and their voices are, well, you heard them. They are just awesome, and they offset each other, and they're that I'm a music aficionado. What I mean by that is I pick most of the music that we use for the show, Outback Outdoors or whatever. And actually, Dustin, he's very good about being able to set a tone. But music is as important in telling a story as the video is. Being able to evoke emotions and be able to connect with your viewer, music is a great medium. So, and I like to use, of course, Bren Hill has been a huge part of our television show, Outback Outdoors. And, you know, he really touches on a lot of the things that we hold near and dear in the Western culture. And then, but being able to connect with what you're trying to do with your viewers, I think music is huge. So.
I couldn't agree more because you can convey a lot about a scene or what you want to in a short amount of time with the right song.
Yeah, for sure.
What was your favorite part of filming the Ibex?
I think it was just pushing our limits. I think it was taking these, you know, 11 guys, 12 guys, 14 if you include the family, my family that we stayed with in Deming, New Mexico. But being on the Rock and switching out guys because we'd switch out cameramen to keep them fresh and to put new batteries, and I'd stay there, and they just, it was when they finally asked me to get off the mountain and take a shower, they asked me because I stunk so bad. But I'd been there, you know, for so long, I just smelled like a goat, and I think that was neat seeing how everybody responded to just the turmoil, the tired, everybody's tired. You're frustrated. You're, you know, and then still doing good work.
So Trevin, am I going to hurt your feelings if I tell you that I thought you normally smelled like a goat anyway? So
No, you won't. That has actually become my cover scent.
Yeah.
Attraction lure.
That's right. I'm killing lots of coyotes lately.
There you go.
No.
All right.
So right on that. So we're looking forward to seeing the next episode and the work that you guys are putting out. I mean, I get us spoiled with Trevin a little bit. We actually get, you know, we sit in on Scott Watley's radio show here off and on here in Denver,
And Sportsman's of Colorado.
Sportsman's of Colorado. And then also, you know, ISC shows and stuff. We've been able to hook up there, and I've sat in on some of Trevin's seminars. So, Trevin, what else you have coming up, you know, to close out here? You know, of course, we know you got your hands in a lot of, you know, you got a lot of irons in the fire. But
right,
if there's
right.
a few things that you want to let our listeners know, you know, to look out for, other than, you know, what's coming out on TV right now, what do you have coming up?
Well, first of all, to explain the situation, a lot of people have asked me, what's the deal with Outback Outdoors, Train to Hunt, and High Plains Creative? And what I did, we started Outback Outdoors, but I started High Plains Creative because I wanted to be able to do some work outside the industry. And as you can imagine, a Chevrolet dealer that wants me to do a video for them doesn't want to order. They don't want to work with Outback Outdoors. They want to work with a production company. So that's why we started High Plains Creative, so we could do other work. Train to Hunt and Outback Outdoors are now being produced by High Plains Creative. So what we've got coming up, we've got, of course, the rest of the Train to Hunt qualifiers. And then, of course, we've got Nationals coming up. You know, this weekend is the qualifier in Colorado. And then we got Nationals August 1st and 2nd here in Colorado for Train to Hunt. And then start to get ready for that. That's going to go on in 2016. The Train to Hunt series will start. And so that's huge. And then, of course, it's getting ready for the final edits for Season 4. And then we jump, you know, for us in the West, August is when we start hunting. And it's pretty much solid from then on. So, cool.
All right, we got some stuff ourselves to cover before we get out of here that I've been forgetting about. We had the competition for the championship bow hunting swag and membership, and the winner of that was Keaton Chancellor. So if you hit us up on our Facebook page, we'll get you set up with that. Also, we have a new giveaway going on thanks to Phil's cousin Jesse over at Anchor CrossFit, who's running some boot camps to get people ready for hunting season. And that is for one
he's paying for an entry fee to someone for any of the Train to Hunt qualifiers or Nationals if you qualify for Nationals. So what we're going to do is why don't just do it with this video, with this episode here, Will? Just we'll get people to like and share it on Facebook.
Well,
do a Facebook giveaway.
What I'd like to do is you got to like it, share it, this episode, like it, share it, and then post under this episode's first posting your Train to Hunt kind of moment. It doesn't have to be Train to Hunt. It can be training, you know, what's got you inspired to get fit for hunting, that sort of thing. I saw Jesse do something like that, and I really like it. So, you know, post that kind of thing. What's got you out there working out? What's inspiring you?
And I can speak on Jesse, and that guy is phenomenal. I've actually been to a couple of his workouts, and that guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, we, you know, of course, we're biased. He's my family. But he runs a great gym here, the north side of Denver, in the, I guess, Henderson area. If you're around Anchor CrossFit, there's a plug for you. And we appreciate the giveaway. We appreciate the love. I mean, he said he had that to give away, and he right away reached out to us and said he wanted to work with us on doing it through the podcast. So we appreciate that.
So thank you very much, Jesse. Next week on the podcast, we have Matt Anderson and Josh Bednors. They are fellow Train to Hunt athletes as well as CrossFit regional athletes. So we're going to be talking a lot of fitness, Train to Hunt. I believe Josh is competing this weekend in Denver. Good luck to all of you competing in Denver this weekend. It's going to be one hell of a competition. And Matt just won UMCLAW? Was that in Washington this past week?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He just took the solo gold as well as being my partner for the upcoming Northern Idaho in a week here, 9 days, whatever it is. So pretty stoked to have
Wait,
on.
Question. So if you guys qualify, which I'm sure you will, are you guys going to compete as a team, or is he going to try and win it and take the title from Phil?
I think we're so far from what we've talked is we want to compete against Brock and Tyler all the way to the end.
Ooh, that will be a battle.
We're looking to make this. I don't know if you've heard it, but I'm pushing the team. What's it called? team section, team league? What do we call it?
Yeah, we want
we're pushing teams hard on this show. I'm pushing it. I'm looking to make it the most legitimate contender. The competition you want to be in is going to be team. And special, nobody knows this yet, but Phil, what are you competing in this weekend?
So, you know, the same person we just talked about, Jesse, like I said, he's family. I'm a big guy on family. Jesse's partner for his team had an injury just a couple days ago, and he called me up and he said, "Hey man, I want to do this. Do you want to be my partner for the weekend?" He said, "I know you've already qualified, but I'm looking to have a good time with it." So you know what? I'm going to dabble in the teams this weekend, and Jesse and I are going to we're going to have fun. We're going to get after it, and we're going to encourage everybody on like we always do. But it's going to be fun. Yeah,
that's great. That is
heard it here first. Teams are heating up, Trevin.
Well, you know, I've always thought about that. That's great, especially for a small guy. Man, how cool would it be to have a team where he could carry most of the weight on the meat pack, huh?
That's money. That's why I got Matt.
There you go.
Let's see. Yeah. I think that is all we have.
So,
well, why
so
don't we do this, too? Why don't we throw a Slumberjack bivvy in there for a giveaway on that Facebook, too? I know we can get a Slumberjack bivvy. They just came out with their new line of bivvies. And why don't we throw that in the mix? And
man, Trevin.
So Trevin, why don't we do this? You guys have a post up there about the upcoming Oz episode, right?
Right.
So okay, so let's do your giveaway this way, man, if you don't mind.
No.
Let's post on Trevin's get on Outback Outdoors or Trevin's Facebook page. You know, let people know, share that episode's coming up, and let them know the Natural Born Hunter podcast sent you. How about that?
That's right. That's great. And then we'll give out a Slumberjack, one of the new Slumberjack. And I mean, they're sweet, dude. They're like, it's got the bar if you're claustrophobic. It's even got the fold down screen if there's bugs, or you can have it up. It's a sweet, and it's less than, I think it's 1.3 pounds.
Oh wow, that's lightweight.
That's sweet, yeah.
So
yeah.
Lots of activity going on here. So we'll try to make sense of it, keep it organized for you guys on the next episode.
Yeah. What did we just agree to here? Does anyone know? We're giving stuff away. We're not sure how, but we'll be giving it to you.
We're crazy.
Hey, you know what? We fly from, you know, we're shooting from the hip either way. So we're giving stuff away. Just start liking and sharing our stuff and contribute, be a part of it, and you never know, you might win something. How about that?
There we go. You gotta like it. How about this? Trevin's got enough followers. Trust me, I've seen his social media page. Forget him. He's just giving this stuff to us to give away now. Let's go with this post. That way people are out there hearing Trevin. You share the post that we post up, the we'll say the audio, the first audio post of this episode. You share it from our Facebook page, you like it, and then in the comment section below, you give us your training moment, what's inspiring you to get in shape for hunting season, and you will be entered to win. We'll make it, you will get the 100 whatever dollar, however much it costs to compete and train to hunt, or your entry will be paid for, and you will get the bivvy.
Hey, don't forget to share the Oz episode, too.
Let's show some love for being just the kind of man who comes on here and gives shit away.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
I love it.
We're having fun. Trev, hey, man, take care of yourself. Get better.
All right, guys.
You know, medicated. We appreciate you coming on tonight. And we'll talk to you soon, man.
This is the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Wake up, chase your dreams, repeat. And for all of those of you who didn't catch the episode and haven't heard it, here is Immortalized by the Damsels.
James Dean in a gray Porsche. John Wayne on a white horse, Elvis in blue suede, Marilyn and JFK, they had something that everybody wants. Everybody wants to live and never die. Everybody wants to be immortalized.